Welcoming back. I'm your host, Sully, and once again, we're always finding a way to mix it up a bit, revitalize the chat, reopen the discussion, and I just figured, hey, you know, a lot of us love this damn show that is The X-Files and its various sister shows, Millennium and Lone Gunman, so I just figured, hey, how about, we've already talked about the actors, we already reviewed the actual saga, how about we just for many other of these movies and shows we're revisiting, let's discuss the highlights, the best iconic moments that sit in and resonate in our minds. So returning to the show, we got both Corby Stevens and Oreo Brewer. Welcome, gents.
Thank you.
All righty.
Always a pleasure.
Anytime. Thank you very much. And welcoming also aboard is, once again, Carly Blake and Lauren. Welcome.
Hey, guys. Thank you so much for having us. It's great to be here. We're from the X-Files fan retrospective.
You guys are very busy. I would often see you post probably the most, you know, on this day in TV history. Glad to have you guys on here. And if anything, we might as well have, you know, bigger hardcore fans than us, you know, who can name every scene, every quote, even every funny moment. We've done all other sorts of retrospects and had other fans on here, so I guess we'll just kind of circle how we got into it and then just kind of discuss like the moments that stick with us the most. So again, you know, the new guests go first. Let's start with you, Lauren. When was the first time you started trying to tape the show or just couldn't get enough of it?
Oh, that's such a great question. Well, I should say that the show aired when I was about 9 years old, and I've actually been watching it from the beginning, which is questionable at best, but I do credit The X-Files for my love of horror movies and creatures. So, like I said, I was 9 years old, and Friday nights on Fox were a huge deal in my house. Everyone knew we had to be home by 9 p.m. to watch The X-Files before it moved to Sundays. And I remember you asked when I was taping it, and I remember there'd be things like school dances in seventh and eighth grade. Oh, and wow. I would have a neighbor tape the X-Files for me because I'd usually miss the first 10 minutes or so.
All right.
Yeah, so it was great. I was definitely that kid rushing home from the middle school dance to go home and watch two FBI agents run around in a cornfield. That was me.
That is amazing. Carly, welcome.
My story is similar to Lauren's, since we actually grew up together. But I was 10 years old when it started. But my love really started, my dad used to watch it on Friday nights, and that and old reruns of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And I would randomly sit down and watch, and I thought, all right, this is interesting. And then I would say maybe we were in early teens, I have a vivid memory of watching like the X-Files marathons on Thanksgiving. Like I'd be in my aunt's bedroom watching the best episodes over and over again, like being so antisocial. It just
welcome to the club.
Oh yeah. I mean, I taped all of them. I had them all. I mean, it's funny, you think of the VHS tapes, and I remember I had like a white cabinet in my bedroom, and it was filled with softball highlights and X-Files tapes. I was like, this is so pathetic. But I love it. Like, it was just, when my mom threw them out, I think I cried. I mean, I wish I still had some of them on tape, but they're long gone, unfortunately. But
yep. Welcome to the club. I've gotten endless discussions with my mother. She's like, oh, you can just rent it. I'm like, no. If you're going to rent it 20 plus times, you might as well own it and save yourself all the time and money.
True.
It's.
I'm not going to watch sequels 2 through 5 or whatever when the part 1 isn't even in the story.
Damn.
Yeah. So very nice. Very nice. Corby, we wanted to get you on for this part of the chat last time, but so I'll let you hit stride. Why is this one of your top 10 fandoms?
Well, I think I might officially be the old person in the group because I was in college when the X-Files started.
All good.
It came on in 93. The first 2 years, I think I missed because I was away at school and couldn't afford a television. But when I moved back and grew up, so to speak, I instantly fell in love with the Chris Carter stuff for sure.
Yeah.
It was... You know, what if how could certain conspiracy theories maybe might be true? And I was just kind of hooked.
It had something for everybody. It's even just so hysterical when you watch other shows that were on around the same time, like Homicide: Life in the Street, and they throw out, what's everyone watching after school? Oh, once we get home from work, I'm watching the X-Files. And just so funny, Detective Munch says that line, because to make it even more meta, he appears on a later X-Files episode when Mulder gets arrested in Baltimore.
That's right. That's so hilarious.
It's created a whole giant universe even from that. It always was a big impactful thing in my house. Ironically, my uncle, who was a big sci-fi guy, wasn't as into it. And I never knew why. I think he just couldn't keep up with it. My parents would watch it, and it was kind of what we call just the Battlestar Galactica Stargate routine. It's like, sit up. Then it doesn't matter if you're up till one. Okay, you're older. You can come out here and sneak a peek. But if it gets too freaky, time to go to bed.
Well, it was a different kind of storytelling than most other sort of sci-fi stuff.
Oh, maybe, totally.
Yeah, definitely.
In reality, to be sci-fi. But it's definitely, easy to get hooked on.
I'll even just go as far as to say I kind of got even more into kind of horror and especially sci-fi from that, and Star Trek and Twilight Zone, because it was just an even more evolved. You just loved how fleshed out all these protagonists were, and like we were even saying before while we were prepping, it's kind of hard to classify. I mean, even though many will put it in just the sci-fi fantasy horror section, is like, there's kind of some action-packed and mystery moments too. There's even dramatic moments where, again, it doesn't really necessarily have anything to do with aliens or government conspiracies. It could even just be a supernatural, monster or enhanced serial killer. Special. Yeah, there you go. There's plenty of holiday specials.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the phrases X-Files and holiday special don't quite go together like Charlie Brown and holiday special.
Oh, yeah. And especially when they did some of the episodes where there's like, we this is technically could be rated R, so we have to play this after midnight.
That a very special X-Files.
Very special. And I had no idea until recent research that is like they would replay those, and that would be part of the hook, the episode that the FCC doesn't want you to see. So we're airing it after midnight when everyone stops complaining. So I guess we'll just circle around. Just what are some pivotal moments that you all just feel are just like just key, like if you're gonna see 10 episodes, for any older fan who wants to rewatch but doesn't have the time to go for a season, or a newbie who's of course spoiled and just wants to see the highlights, what are some moments where you're just gonna be like, well, whoever you are, you must see this episode. You must see this moment.
I'd say the cliffhangers between each season at the end, that just, it hooks you straight into the next season.
Yeah.
And before, that long ass wait for it too back then was like, fuck.
Yeah. And you see just about every other show is pretty much inspired by it. Criminal Minds, Lost, even Walking Dead. And you're just like, even if X-Files did it and it got some controversy for it, I couldn't applaud. I still had to applaud them for doing that. It's like, hey, they reined us in. They gave us an excuse to not hang up on the show.
And they switched it up. They didn't keep with the same shit. Because if you take all the episodes, divide it in half, you have half mythos, half alien conspiracy.
Oh, totally. And Mulder's on the run. The unit is being shut down again. But who by? It's someone else.
I feel like that could be a drinking game. How many times did it almost get shut down and take a drink?
In a way, I wonder how many, if every other spy show took from that, because it seemed like that was the case with every other procedural or spy show. They would do that. It's like there's a new lieutenant and they're the boss from hell. They want you out of here.
I think everything stole from the X-Files. I mean, just like,
oh, yeah.
Look at Stranger Things, just from a newer standpoint.
How about even all of UPN?
It's just really like everything kind of stole a little tiny bit. I mean, even look at something like Breaking Bad, which
Vince Gilligan carried that still.
And that's essentially kind of ripped from the headlines, ripped from the X-Files. It's you know, that's essentially could be its own series in itself, ripped from the X-Files.
Oh, totally. It pretty much made Howard Gordon's career. He was a big writer in the earlier seasons on that and Beauty and the Beast. And when he went on to the Buffy and 24 franchise, he was pretty much doing a lot of the same thing. And when he reunited with his writing partner, Alex Gonza, is like when you get to Homeland, you're like, yeah, Carrie Matheson is pretty much modern day Scully with playing modern day politics. And of course, because she's strong and independent, and there's just so many pigs and other awful individuals who should never be in the government, you know, she is the one savior of us all. But yeah, no, I'm with you all. I Gillian Anderson is one of my top 200 actors. I just think it's got something for everybody. And even so-called skeptics who don't want to get into the show, they're just missing out. I see so much influence on it. There's even earlier franchises that, like even Phantasm, that kind of have just, it makes you wonder if X-Files was the more modern or mainstream version of it. Because like you say, just everyone has their own preference. I've known plenty who didn't even like all the mythology. It got too complex for them, but they wanted to see a standalone thing. And so it is kind of the Star Trek effect. It's like, whatever your preference, there is something for everybody. So pick and choose. Have fun.
True.
Maybe this came up on another episode, but did it? And I'm trying to think through the X-Files now. Some shows, particularly Star Trek shows, seem to take one or two seasons to find their footing. And then the third season, it hits its stride. But I don't know that that's the case for the X-Files. It seems like it hit it with the ground from the ground running.
Yeah, even people who complain about season one episodes seem to still like them, because again, they're like Twilight Zone. Just like, there's something to analyze. The idea is even bigger than the actual presentation and delivery, because you're just like, who else will do, you know, a serial killer who can literally squeeze through a pipeline? You know, who else can do, you know, killer bees and other mutations and just stuff that even puts the simplest universal horror to shame. It's just like, man, they went there. And
speaking of going there, that one of the episodes that pops into my head when I think about watching the series is the one where our heroes have to go to a farm in the South, and there's this family that's been inbred.
Oh yeah,
right. One of the controversial episodes. Yeah.
No, that's the controversial episode. That was the reason why the ratings started popping up on the right hand side of the TV, because of that home episode.
I know. It's just, there was like one other later, I think 2001 episode, that also made parents say, "Put your kids to bed early so they don't have to see it."
I'm sure there was others, but it's the main one.
It started it. You're right. And
yeah, it was wild. That was a crazy episode.
I just find it even funny how writers Morgan and Wong were like, we didn't even know it was going to be that freaky, but you know, they weren't thinking of how, you know, the filmmakers would interpret it and create it the next day, because they were just so used to doing just stuff that was just weird.
We apologize, everyone. We're sorry. We didn't.
Right, we're sorry.
That reminds me of Babylon 5's arc with Inova. Not Inova. Ivanova.
Yeah, Ivanova. Yeah. And her secrets that she was keeping. The Inbred family, I would just simply say, is a key episode. I do remember just so many other ones. I'm going to go with the submarine episode.
So,
that one just leaves you literally gasping for air. You just, it's so claustrophobic the way it's filmed.
The submarine's like the scariest thing in the world.
Right. I would never do it. I would not go into space. I would not go on a submarine, no matter how safe it is. I've just seen too many movies and documentaries. Carly, how about yourself? What is a key, exciting, or freaky moment that you're like, someone's got to see this moment, or at least.
I'm going to go the other direction. I'm going to go back to what originally grabbed me from the show, and that's the Darren Morgan episodes. One of the first ones I ever saw later, I had seen episodes, but one of the first ones that I remember coming back to was Small Potatoes. And I think if you have never seen the X-Files, and if you're not sure, watch all the Darren Morgan episodes.
Yes.
And, you're gonna be like, oh my god, this show is phenomenal. It's funny, it's witty, it's different. And then you can get into the conspiracy. Because look, I'm all about conspiracies. I'm all about the story, the mythology, and you know, I love CSM and I love Alex Krycek, but something about small potatoes, you know. It's just all those type, Bad Blood, you know, a Postmodern Prometheus, which I know is not a Darren Morgan, but ones that are a little bit off kilter, a little funny, a little bit
very cryptic. Yeah.
I mean, just give you a little bit something different, throw you off. I mean, I also, from a more, I'm going to go to the production side because of the years I've worked in production, the cinematic detail, those, I mean, honestly, The X-Files is one of, created the mood for many, 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 many shows that have now, that are now out. The darkness, it's incredible that it was created by The X-Files. But for, you know, the cinematography, something like, just something as simple as like, turning black and white for like, it grabs you, even if the story's like whatever, because it is, it's kind of like a goofy story, like it kind of drags you in. It's like, oh, this is something that's a little bit different, a little, you know, more interesting.
Oh, totally.
Yeah, I'm the opposite with that. I like the ones, I love the ones with Kim Manners when he's when I did my retrospect bit on this, I was thinking back. I was like, man, I really loved all the episodes Kim Manners was featured in. And it didn't really dawn on me. I was like, damn, Kim's really good. And always excited.
There's one of their lead producers and directors. He had a pretty big career. But I'm with you. Like, it is cool seeing how Morgan got involved, and then he involved his like brother, and then they were having to tell, you know, remind Chris, hey, you got to keep this afloat, you know where it's going, you know, we've helped out Millennium, we now got our own show Space Above and Beyond, but we can't do it all, so you know, give us like 5 episodes a season and don't overwhelm us, buddy. you've interviewed just so many great guests on there, including just even actors who just aren't even talked about enough, like James Pickens and one of the other lead writers, Frank Spotnitz. Who have been your personal favorite of all the interviews?
Oh, that's so hard to say. We've personally interviewed more than 90 cast and crew and countless fans worldwide about the impact of the X-Files. So, I mean, obviously, David Duchovny, Julian Anderson, Chris Carter, Mitch Pileggi, William B. Davis, Annabeth Gish, Robert Patrick. Those were really exciting for us because these were the people that we ran home on Friday nights for, right? But we've also interviewed, you know, the casting directors, the producers, graphic artists, stuntmen, just wardrobe, makeup. One of my favorite interviews, you know, obviously putting Mr. Duchovny and Ms. Anderson aside, one of my favorite interviews is Alec Gillis, you know, the creature and special effects master. And throughout the whole interview, my eyes are just darting around his studio. And at the end, I said,
must have you for eternity.
Yeah, I was like, I was seeing all these cool things in the frame, and I was like, Alec, no pressure, but can you pick up your laptop and just walk around your studio? And he did it, and it was incredible, and I loved it. And I kept that in the rough cut when we, because we put rough cuts on YouTube for people to check out while we're working on our doc. And I left that in because I really enjoyed it, and I know someone else out there would love to see it as well. So that was one of my favorites because, you know, I remember watching Pumpkinhead as a kid and being terrified and Predator and, of course, Alien. I was super excited for that interview. But we had some really unbelievable guests.
They really did. And just some of the ones who were just like, but, you know, this was like their side gig. It was like, do free blockbuster or infamous movies this year and then come out to Toronto and Vancouver.
Oh, exactly. It was crazy. And some of the stories we've heard, and again, we're speaking with people who don't get the DVD extras on the box sets.
Yeah, they've only just seen it on TV or streaming, unfortunately.
Right. We're speaking with folks who are not at Comic-Con, and we're hearing all these unbelievable behind-the-scenes stories. I mean, we've even spoken with Exhibit and Sir Billy Connolly from Fight the Future the feature films. And it's like,
even Robbie Amell. And these guys don't get enough love for their efforts. They were just kind of briefly on there, and you're like, yeah, but they were good.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Robbie too. Was a delight. And I know that when Carly and I were speaking with Exhibit, he was in the back of a car on the way to the beach. And he's like, hey, what's up? Let's talk about the X-Files. And we're like, all right, this is amazing. Thank you. Right? So, I mean, that was a very long answer, but I can't pick a favorite interview, but we are fine. With everyone. How about you, Carly?
Well, I just, before I make that answer, I want to piggyback off of what Lauren just said was, the one thing I want people to know is every single person we've spoken to has had a positive thing to say about the X.
Yeah, I believe it. Galaxy Cons had an interview with
everyone.
Gish, Thompson, and Nick Leah, and they all pretty much have the same story. Just like, yeah, I've been on plenty of other great shows, but this is still the number one job. And I wish I could go.
Absolutely. But like Lauren said, people like Alec Gillis who have such an illustrious career when it comes to their trade, their craft. And mm-hmm. like we did an interview with Sherry Montesanto, who did the effects makeup, and just the woman's won Emmy upon Emmy upon Emmy. And I
think right?
that was three. I kept Emmy upon Emmy upon Emmy. you know, and just for the talent that they have, and they look at the X-Files with such adoration, which I think is such a cool thing, you know, because we look at it as fans and these guys look at it as, you know, they had the privilege to be part of it. And, you know, I've worked in production for many years and there's not a lot of people who say that about the shows that they work on because, you know, a lot of time it's a very stressful, especially the X-Files. The X-Files was like nothing I've ever seen. And when we interviewed Harry Bring, may he rest in peace, he, you know, said that they had three units going at one time, and that's unprecedented.
Yeah.
Unprecedented. And stayed on budget. And when you can do something like that, when it's so high level and you're essentially shooting a mini feature a week, and you're shooting three units with however many, you know, main top 10 actors, and you're staying on budget and getting it on air every week.
Very rare.
It's unheard of. It's just disgusting. And that's why I wasn't going to say Harry Bring wasn't the answer I was going to give, you know, because he was an incredible person we spoke to. And unfortunately he passed about 3 weeks after we spoke to him. And, we were very lucky to speak to him. I got off track, but
no, my it's fine. Person, this is what it's the fun. Just the nostalgia.
The person I'm still in awe of is, and Lauren, thank God, took the picture of me doing it, was interviewing Chris in person. The unfortunate part about our project, I mean, fortunate and unfortunate, is we've been doing this project mainly during COVID. And because of it, everything's been done on Zoom like this, which has been phenomenal because everybody has said yes and. I mean, with very few
everyone sounds better. Yeah.
Everybody sounds phenomenal. But so we haven't been able to do the face to face like we had hoped for. We did a few people in person. We've met Nick. We've met Mitch. We've met David. Reese Darby. I can't remember anybody. Paul McCrane. Some random folks.
Tucker Smallwood.
him we did on Zoom. Tucker was in.
Oh, okay. You're talking about in person. Yes, that's true.
Yeah, no, in person is we just had a handful because
just a handful
COVID hit, and then we were like, "How are we going to do this? We really want to do this."
All
like,
right. What? I don't want to make you late for your gig or sick, but hey, we're here.
Yeah,
exactly. So, Chris was my penultimate for me because I'm sitting across from the creator of the show's. Who's the reason I went into television production and interviewing him and he's answering me and I wasn't even hearing what he was saying. I could not comprehend what I was doing and I was just lucky to get the questions out of my mouth. And then we kept hearing a toilet flush, but that's a whole other thing from where we were. But
you're too close to it.
We were way too close to a toilet, but it was one of those things that you never think
this is taking a turn.
Yeah. Well, you never think it's going to happen. And then, you're there, and he remembers a toilet flush, but you know.
No, Carly, you did a great job interviewing Chris. I 100% believe that you don't recall what he was saying because I'm not even sure how we drove home that night.
We'll return after these messages. Do you ever find yourself thinking about who would win in a fight between Goku and Superman? Hi, I'm James Gavsey, and on the Who Would Win show, me and my co-host Ray ignore anything important happening in the outside world and debate fictional battles between characters from comics, movies, and video games.
We got a new show every week, and almost always am I the winner.
Yeah, not true, Ray.
In the past, we've discussed such matches as Captain America versus Darth Vader, Solid Snake versus the Iron Giant, classic matchups like RoboCop versus Terminator, and even the Muppets versus Sesame Street.
That one was crazy. So if you're a fan of geek culture and love a spirited debate, check out the Who Would Win show wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out at whowouldwinshow.com.
We let things pile up in the DVR, we add them to our queues, we wait for the DVDs and Blu-rays. We time shift. The Time Shifters Podcast. Sci-fi, horror, fantasy, superheroes, comedy, action, film, television, maybe some not-so-current events. Find us on iTunes or at timeshifterspodcast.com.
Cool thing about Blind Knowledge is we are in multiple countries. We are worldwide, all across the globe. We are in the US, we are in the UK, we are in Canada, Germany, India, Japan. We're in Australia, y'all. BlindKnowledge.com. Now back to the feature presentation.
Dragon Ball Z, One Piece, Naruto, all things that we love, all manga that were originally published in the legendary magazine Weekly Shonen Jump.
But not every series can run for 300 chapters and have a hit anime. This is David.
This is Jordan.
We're the hosts of Shonen Flop. Each episode, we look at manga that ran in Jump that didn't quite make it.
We discuss what it did wrong, what it did right, how the series could have turned itself around, and ultimately, was it a flop or not?
Run all your favorite podcast apps, and you can find us at shonenflop.com.
Keep on flopping, floppers.
I don't remember driving. I just remember talking about...
And you were driving.
Burner, and I was driving. I don't know how we got driving. Back. But, yes, okay, so I'm going to steal that answer. Yes, Chris Carter, in-person interview. We had spoken to him on Zoom twice prior, but I think the in-person interview probably takes the cake. Carly, I think you're right.
Yeah. Very nice. Oh, man. Please, everyone, check out their show. Oh, it's very accessible on YouTube. You don't lose anything except wonderful stories. Check it out. I do applaud you, Blake, for, you know, when you've been working behind the scenes, they definitely want to talk to someone who's more like that. You're like, okay, you know all the lingo, all the phrases. I'm much more comfortable talking to you as opposed to a reporter who's very clueless and doing this as part of an editorial job, you know. And congrats.
It's not stressful, you know, like you said.
It's organic as opposed to what's my favorite color, who am I dating, and it's like, stop that.
Exactly.
And congrats on your award wins, since you worked on for MLB.
Oh, thank you very much. I've been very blessed. Thank you.
Does anyone have some other fun kind of like WTF moments that they kind of think are a little underrated? I kind of thought it was underrated that cigarette smoking man is the one who actually killed JFK.
This guy kind of snuck that in there. Yeah, it's funny.
I was like, someone's got to do it.
Are you surprised?
Yes and no. I mean, they might. I just, considering when they made that, you know, I had people who, like my grandmother, who were like, oh, you never talk about that. So I just interested to see how they snuck that in there. And it was left for last before anyone could say, no, you can't upload that. You can't do that.
Right.
But like you hinted at more, is like it did make the TV execs just less likely to say no. You know, it's like, just try something out. If you don't want to see it, just change the channel. But any other plot twists that you think are just phenomenally done? Let's let Lauren go first, and then.
No, I was just going to say, in terms of favorite episodes that I like to recommend, I always enjoy The Host, and that is the one with the large worm in the New Jersey sewers. That is
that one repeated quite a lot. I was like, whoa.
It's the creature and the makeup.
Mulder's not in it. Doggett's helping out, and
everybody's
like,
there. It's just crazy. It's a good one. I always say, oh, check that one out. You'll get a pretty good gist of what the show is about.
Right.
I think that's one of the top moments for me, and that always comes to mind when people are like, oh, the X-Files, I should watch that. Where should I start? And I was like, well, you either in or you're out after you watch The Host. So
yeah. You can't. So many want to take shortcuts and I'll never understand it. And it's just like, if you love all these other shows, all I can say is make less time with rewatching and make more time watching something you haven't seen. It's a way to squeeze it all in, guys. Corby, do you have any plot twists from any era that you think are just like dynamite that should be in like a top 20 TV moments?
Another standout in my head that is a one-off is the guy who can sniff out cancer.
Very nice. It's very like, nice. Yes. Because wow. If there's one thing everyone is just like equally, I mean, Millennium does this later on too. It's just like, if there's anything they all have in common is being afraid of, if not death, then just uncurable disease. And it's like, that was such a trend back then. And, you know, now we see other people taking it for granted. And it's like, yeah, but there's still just some stuff where it just makes you wonder, where has all the medical science gone? Which corporation is, you know, controlling what scientific study that's up to date or out of date? It's, and, you know, several times Mulder and Scully get afflicted with something and you think they're going to die and then they make it out. But you're just like, man. Oh,
yeah. I don't. Well, another memory is not so much a plot twist, but does anybody else recall there was an X-Files video game that was on like a set of CDs?
Yes.
Yeah. Where you basically played through an episode, kind of the choose your own adventure style.
Mm-hmm.
It was the coolest thing.
Yeah, RPG back in the games of computer games, and I would
I don't know if it's the same one you're talking about, but the one that I had, you would switch out discs and it would play. Like yeah, they produced an episode almost. It was like live. It was video of Scully and like, wow.
The actors actually lent their persona and a cutscene would play. There's a cool one where that they did in 04 and they brought back a lot of the key guy people, including Laurie Holden and Nicholas Leah. And that was kind of cool because basically they fight zombies in it and you can choose to play as either Mulder and Scully throughout the entire runtime.
Yeah. And then it's like, please insert disc 4.
Yeah.
Wow. Unfortunately, this was just one disc, but yes, like the earlier one, it was addicting. I'm just glad that they tried that out briefly along with comics.
Yeah, but it's kind of, I don't know, for me, it made me as a fan feel like I'm playing the show, and it made me like it that much more.
Yeah, because there's so many, for the longest time, great movies and shows, and as much communication and budget as they try, they would just always have like a dismal just video game spinoff, and you're just like, guys, you had everybody here. Were you really that pressed for time? Man.
I remember ordering from the Scholastic book flyer.
What?
The X-Files book. Yeah.
Yeah, that was... It was one of many shows that did went ahead with the whole how-to guide and had various people who basically, you know, it was like, in fact, one of many ways I got into it was I would go to a friend's house, and of course, you know, we play around with action figures and everything, and his dad had like a bunch of Kevin J. Anderson was a well-known author for his work for Star Wars, but he had like five different X-Files books that he did. And
I don't remember people.
Mm-hmm. And I there's like two of them in my pal's dad's bookshelves. I'm like, ooh, can I sneak that away? Can I read that? No.
They were good.
I should have. I don't think he would have missed it. It looked like he had read it enough times.
You know, them books that are nice and warning, because you know they have the best love to them.
Oh, yeah. That pretty much page turner, just like the very scripts that they were making. Mm-hmm. There's some underrated moments, I think, in both Millennium and Lone Gunman. You know, Lone Gunman, it was pretty much keep track of the various heists, you know?
I haven't even watched that.
Has anyone seen the episode where they meet Skinner? No?
You know,
okay.
Been so never long. I think I only watched through it once.
No, it's fine. It's a like it or hate it, but if you see that, you'll kind of see where Vince Gilligan went from, you know, X-Files to then Breaking Bad. Like when he was writing stuff for that, still, it's like Yeah, I think that's when his goofy side officially emerged, before he became the A-list, you know, award-winning screenwriter.
Was there a crossover show in each direction between Millennium and X-Files? Was there just one crossover?
Basically, when Millennium got canceled, they brought over Lance Hendrickson's Frank Black for that key.
Wrapped the storyline because it got canceled.
Yeah.
Ended.
And it's so funny seeing Frank Spotnitz talk about it on the DVD, and then years later on the 2014 documentary, he's like, I'm glad I brought him back. And then on the 2014 documentary, he's like, yeah, but I didn't do anything with the character. It's just like, you're too close to it, my dude. But I totally recommend all the various Millennium episodes. There's several moments what's the one who's like the equivalent of Scientology? It's a key episode. Jose Chong. That fictional author does make a key moment on Millennium as well as X-Files, and it's just kind of right. And I didn't know it was standing in for Scientology. It makes sense because it's definitely a similar L. Ron Hubbard type, where you're just like, yeah, this guy makes people do mad things. Millennium has just as many, though, just WTF moments as X-Files, while being its own deal, where you're just like, especially with that Michael Massey moment in with the Jim Jones kind of death cult on later X-Files, would do a lot of those similar stuff, where it's like religion and politics is just ruining other people. Millennium has one of my favorite episodes, which is basically they're going after this murderous group of people who are often, they go on their spring of violence often around when tornadoes are hitting. And so they have to use local law enforcement. And at one point they make a big series of arrests. Everyone's got shotguns out and they're like, we're just storm chasers. We're not bandits. And Millennium will have plenty of just similar moments. Like, I feel like they pretty much gave a lot of his moments back to Mulder and Scully, where they do intense, you know, phone conversations. Where are you? You know, they're going after a crazy madman who may or may not, you know, be a real person or alien in human form. It's just a lot of that same kind of stuff. And there's even a cool train station scene where he's trying to get everyone out and he's trying to find out who the mysterious bomber is. But yeah. His crossover with X-Files was pretty cool because he just had a moment with Mulder and Scully got to save him plenty of times, so as usual.
The most underrated character in X-Files is the alien bounty hunter for me.
Yeah, very creepy.
I love Brian Thompson. Like, he was in everything I ever fucking watched.
Mortal Kombat 2, Terminator, Cobra, of all things, and he is a very nice guy, even though he has that giant, you know, domineering look, and you're very like, oh, nice. Whoa.
Yeah.
Don't they all? Yes.
Yeah.
He passed perfectly in that part. He's terrifying.
Yeah.
You look at him, he just has that weird, he almost doesn't look real.
Yeah, you think you're almost wondering, is he a wrestler? What is
is he a bouncer? Like that. Like, he's such a down to earth guy. Didn't he tell us about how he was building his cabinets, Lauren?
I think he
did. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
He got into how he was demoing his house, and it was just a down to earth guy, but yet was such a terrifying,
the welcome kind of quirky, and yet at the same time, you're like,
yeah.
I think in a GalaxyCon interview, I think he did say that when COVID hit and he saw how awful people were being on social media, he just started taking some mental health consultation, and that was very eye-opening to me. I'm like, that's cool. That just because he's the big guy doesn't mean he thinks he's invincible. He's
true story,
but like you say, he's uncanny, you know. You don't know what to expect until you actually get to sit down and meet him.
So many on television
behind the scenes story. I was like many of you, it sounds, a fan of his when I was growing up, and he's just terrifying. His character is terrifying. total scene stealer on the X-Files. You knew when he showed up, it was going down. It was going crazy. And he had his little ice pick, and not little, but it was like, you know, you knew what was coming, right? It's terrifying.
Yeah.
So early on in COVID, we secured the interview with Brian Thompson, and I'm super excited. And one day before the interview, not even the same day, my phone rings and it's got a California area code. And I'm like, who's this now? Everyone I know is in my house. Who is this? So I answered the phone and he's like, Lauren, hi, it's Brian Thompson. And I swear to God, I stopped in my tracks. I was like, oh, hi. Like, because, nice. You know, like Carly said, he's like super personable, super nice, really low key.
One of those super mutants.
That phone call was super scary.
Yeah. The super mutants know where I live.
Yeah. I was like, oh, hi. Yes. You have my attention. I'm stopping what I'm doing. Everything else. I was like, listening. And it was just like, it's hard to explain. I know it sounds super silly, but it's just.
No,
like,
I've been there.
Watching that character and then like unsuspecting phone call from him. I was like, what? It was crazy. It was
even when you are expecting these, you know, celebs, you're just like, okay, how do I get all this wonderful inertia that I would never give up for anyone or anything? Sorry to sound selfish. This is a wonderful feeling you're feeling right now. And then how do I make my thoughts make sense while I, you know, don't ask you something. This person something they've been asked 200 times and
made a sarcastic joke. Yeah, no, we take a lot of pride in our questions, and often
you do a good job.
When we have the ability to, and we have the time to, we'll go on Twitter and say, hey, we're talking to this person, what do you want to ask? And we get the best fan questions, because like you said, we're not going to ask what you had for dinner and who you're dating. You know, we have
to politics.
Exactly.
I just got brain cancer listening to this. Don't do that.
But it's such a trip, because throughout our entire project, we've gotten phone calls like that. Out of the blue, getting phone calls from people we don't even realize have our phone numbers, because, you know, it's in the our email tag.
Yeah.
Phone numbers, we'll get, and like Lauren says, it comes up 818 or 323, you know, a California number, and we're like,
I'll take it just this once.
I just ignore it. I usually ignore it, even though I have an 818 number, I ignore it. And then you get a voicemail and it's like, hey, Carly, it's Maggie Wheeler. What? It's Rob Bowman. What?
It's funny.
Yeah, Rob Bowman's another favorite
too. Phenomenal. Yeah. Another guy, great guy. He was interviewing us. He was like in his gym. Like,
nice.
What? I mean, about
like his kid's soccer game or something like that.
Something like that. That's where he discovered a lot of the same stuntmen he used on every movie and franchise, and those were like his coordinators on the Star Trek saga. And then,
oh wow,
yeah, Thompson. I lost track of how many Klingons he played throughout the years.
Oh my god, so many.
But yeah, so Bowman. Many. I think he's still utilizing a lot of his same second unit and assistant producer. on Castle and then some. He has always been a team player and been like, everybody does their part, everybody goes home on time. I'm glad you got to talk to him. Yes.
He was a phenomenal guy. Really, we had a great time with him. He was very nice.
Totally. And it's just to hit on you guys' earlier points, it is just fun just seeing how every other show had to just try and do their take. Sometimes it was successful, and other times you're just kind of cringe. You're just like, okay, so this is this show's, you know, traitor of the week or cancer man, but it's doing it so without any care. So I'm just going to the show with campy expectations, on like X-Files, which you can tell when they're having a serious episode versus a campy, you know.
It was like every 5 episodes or so, it was mythos and then conspiracy and then mythos, and then they'd end on a conspiracy.
All these celebrities may or may not be real people. Yeah. All together, I kind of like, I mean, I saw Men in Black before I saw X-Files, but it was kind of fun how when you realize they were kind of a wackier version of, you know, every other buddy movie and X-Files. That became a big saga, and, you know, it was based off a comic, but it was based off old 50s
Malibu
UFO spottings. Yeah.
That was the fun part, is it wasn't afraid to make fun of itself. As dark and dark and dark as it could get, it would highlight its own, you know, sometimes just ridiculous irony, or it's just
the older with the pencils in the ceiling.
Right. Yeah.
Yes. About that shit.
Ross,
oh, really awesome. Funny.
And you did have all these running gags, so I'm sure there's a YouTube compilation of how many times they yell each other's name when they're at a crime scene, or Scully solves the crime, or Mulder talks about his porn addiction. Yeah, there's plenty of that. It's like everyone's got their own set of recurring gags, and I kudos to the Lone Gunman. There are some fans, I'll bring it up, and for some reason they don't know who I'm talking about, and there's other times where it's like, oh, I love those guys. Those guys are my favorites. I'm like, oh, really? Okay, nice. But they've done conventions and other fans. It's kind of funny when you see them on TV shows. Even if they're not appearing, of course, as the Lone Gunman, just the other shows were such fans of X-Files, they would kind of give them a similar role. It's like, okay, you're playing the conspiracy theorist. So, you know, I've seen them on all the other shows like Stargate, Dead Zone, and Psi-Factor, and you're just like, yeah. But that's kind of fun that you're kind of doing a twist, you know, on your iconic role. Yeah, there's pretty much anything on Space Channel or Sci-Fi Channel they were on. All three of them are still alive. And I know this is an unpopular take. I kind of liked a lot of moments on the last two seasons. I know some don't, but I kind of liked how they brought the Lone Gunman back. And I was like, oh, nice. For the longest time, I thought they were dead. You know, you see them going into that van and you think, oh, we're not seeing him anymore. This sucks. I'm like, nope, they're back.
definitely not.
Right. I know the continuation, you know, had mixed reviews, but I really enjoyed just seeing all the characters back on the screen. I don't really care what they were doing. It was just nice to see everybody. And like you said, you're like, oh, good, the Lone Gunmen are back. Nice. All right. You're like, can't tell you what they were doing or where they were, but it's nice to see them. It's like seeing an old friend, right?
It kind of is like that. It's a blur, but I mean, at the same time, I mean, sooner or later, the party was going to get back together, you know, whether people want it or not. You know, it's just, I think everyone's getting too modern or spoiled on everything that they love. And I think the internet has just made a lot of people just lazy. You know, when they like something or reject something, they just don't know how to describe it. When we were seeing people get into conversations about Star Trek and, oh, it's so progressive. I'm like, yeah, it was always progressive. What were you watching? I think a lot of people just have been under a rock. They just, and if they don't like it, they can't bring the words or time to just describe
it. I'm going
to
cancel this show. It's horrible.
Oh, that was creepy, but wonderful of them.
Who was that?
That is Mayo. He is the king of voiceovers. Yes.
Yep.
I will always put Cancer Man though as one of the best villains of all time. That is for sure.
Yes.
Oh, great. And how can you not kill him? The guy can't die.
Oh no.
Yeah.
He never dies.
Wow. He never dies. And even
I remember that episode. Oh god, I got goosebumps.
Yeah, so many of them. But
The desert scene with him, that one with the long hair. Oh,
yeah, when they blew him up with the missile.
Yes.
That was an iconic moment. And once again, you thought he was gone. And he has all this other unusual scientific stuff that he's inserted himself with. But and unlike any other, to you guys' point, you know, unlike any other sci-fi horror show, when people do something dumb, you're just, you know, yelling at the screen and not in a good way. And with this, it is pretty calculating. He's like, he knows, he leaves key information that they absolutely need to know, you know, whenever they're about to kill him. You know, he's like he's more polished than an actual politician. He is very calculating, and he's like, you're not going to kill me.
He's like the OG politician.
Right.
He is the politician.
For all we know, he probably funded half these guys and they were his pawns. You know, he was their donor. You know?
I'd even say the syndicate was more underrated than he was.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean,
I wish they had kept the syndicate. I wish there had been more with, you know, I think what was it, season 6 or 7 that they,
I think,
know,
so.
With the Meet Rogers thing. And
I think it was after the movie.
Yeah, it was after the movie. It was definitely after
they wanted
in LA,
to wrap
but
it up.
They set them all on fire
new.
And stuff.
But yeah.
It's like, I wish they had kind of gone more with it, because that part of the conspiracy I thought was really interesting, and it was very...
At least have one more guy who got away and they need to take him down, you know?
Right, because then it just became him, and as much as I like his character, like, it really was kind of interesting to have, like, a group of conspiracy theorists like that, where it was essentially like a shadow government.
Yeah.
Everything, right? That was making the decisions for the government.
Yep.
Or whatever.
Millennium
whatever
did a bit of that as well. Millennium would do a bunch of those other ones because it involved, you know, private eyes and rogue FBI guys. And there were many moments where, you know, people would go out in the parking lot and, of course, on cue, their car explodes or what have you. And I was always waiting for Cancer Man or someone else he had, you know, been mentoring to show up there. And then, you know, you want to see the conclusion, watch X-Files next week and then watch us, you know. But they didn't do that. They fortunately kept them isolated. And I applaud them for that because too many other shows do that now. And you're like, wait. So you're on season 6 and you're on season 2. I can't keep up with the cliffhangers and resolutions on each, you know. I do like how Dick Wolf does it nowadays, where it's like you can see enough of either episode where if you miss the conclusion, you're not robbed. But there's other ones who would do that. I'm like, guys, I can't keep up. I really can't. And I love you all.
But yeah, nowadays,
too much TV.
I feel like Netflix and Hulu and those kind of television studios, if you will, have kind of brought it back because, yes, you're right. Dick Wolf, it's like a procedural where you don't have to worry about, you miss chunks of time.
But like, I'm not going to see the serial killer on trial, but I'm at least going to see them be pistol whipped and then arrested.
You're not going to miss anything. But like, I'm watching Handmaid's Tale on Hulu right now. And if I look at my phone for 30 seconds, I've missed
what just
so
happened?
Much. Yeah. And I can't stand that because I need to focus on something. And X-Files is like that. You miss something. And that's a key, unless it's like one of the standalone episodes, but like you miss something and boom, you're gone. And I think a lot of television has kind of gone back to that now. Like, you know, you're
the right people will get it if you give us a chance.
It's so detailed and it's so there. But I think this kind of goes back to the X-Files. This brings you back.
Always.
That these show, always, that it comes back to these. X-Files created these mini movies every week. Whereas television was never really like that before.
No.
There was really
even when
no
it was serialized, they had to rein it in.
So. Star Trek, maybe, but the technology wasn't quite there yet. Like, I've since become a fan of Star Trek because of my husband. And I think that they were fabulous shows, but they weren't mini movies. They weren't, the technology wasn't there. The X-Files, they were miniature movies every time. And now you have shows that have they didn't have the budget.
Now
they have the budget. They have all this friggin' money and they're making these mini movies, whereas the X-Files did it without the budget and without the resources.
Yeah.
And it's just, to me, such a miraculous thing. And I think it's still, but aside from the first 3 seasons where Scully is wearing those massive shoulder pads the entire time, I think the rest of the series really kind of stands up to today. Like, I think it looks modern.
Block
cell phones. Like,
yeah. Even with the pagers and so, they still use it very minusculely.
It's not too outdated. I think it's people are kind of followed, except for those goddamn shoulder pads. I had to make fun of the wardrobe person. I was like, you just knew when it changed. All of a sudden, like 97, the shoulder pads.
Not a thing anymore, but I'm totally with you. I think every other Mike Flanagan miniseries, he's definitely inspired by all things spooky, and it's cool that he gets Annabeth Gish on all his movies and shows. Handmaid's Tale and even Frank Spotnitz's work on Man in the High Castle and even The Expanse. I think, like you say, everyone's used to just having a giant 8-part movie now, which just didn't used to be a thing. And even if studios haven't even seen X-Files, they pretty much want a similar kind of marketing. We want something that's has some gotcha moments.
Yeah, true. One thing I love about X-Files that I discovered after I watched it through reruns on TNT was CSM cigarettes were herbal cigarettes, not actual cigarettes.
And then that became a recurring prop that they would use in every other show. It's like, you're not
just
smoking.
After the pilot, though. Did you know the pilot, they were real cigarettes?
No, I didn't know that.
I think I did see that. I still can't fathom how, you know, William B. Davis, they were just having to be a featured extra basically with years of theater, and to think that they didn't think of making him the main culprit at the start, you're like, it just blows your mind. Like,
I think they probably had an idea that
had an idea that
there was something else there, but to answer the question about the cigarettes, Bill Davis actually was the one who requested not to use the real cigarettes because he had been a heavy smoker as a young man.
Mm-hmm.
He started to smoke the real cigarettes. And he you know, was very uncomfortable with it. He was afraid he was going to get addicted, and he asked for the herbal cigarettes. He says they're absolutely disgusting.
Yeah.
They're nastiest. I've smelled them because we used to have them on set. I used to work on ER, and we smelled them.
Yeah.
And they were so putrid smelling, I can't imagine putting them in your mouth.
By the time you were on third watch, had they finally done away with it, or was it still a problem?
With herbal cigarettes, or?
Just the actual thing. Or they outlawed it by then for use on?
I don't remember us ever using. I mean, we used them on ER. ER was after third watch. I don't remember ever seeing them on third watch.
I miss third watch. I love so good. Series.
That was a great show, but very hard to shoot. Very difficult to film.
Oh, I bet.
Anything in New York, man. Anything you see, like Law and Order. Mm-hmm. Anything Steady that cam. Shoots in a city environment is just. I mean, the location stuff alone. I mean, I don't have the X-Files. Case in point. Shooting in Vancouver's a little different, but shooting in Los Angeles, I can't even imagine shutting down.
Because you got to shut down streets and get permission from the cops and the fire department and all that shit, because they have to reroute all the emergency vehicles if there's a problem.
Yeah.
Look at 911. I don't know if you guys watch 911 or 911 Lone Star. Those are both Los Angeles based shows. And I have a friend of mine who works on that on 911, the original one, and he says they shut down like massive chunks of Los Angeles. I don't know how you do that. That city's horrible as it is. Like, it's impossible to get around. And I just can't imagine, like, trying to shut it down and have all these cops and fire trucks and massive stunts. I mean, in X-Files was, like, again, the OG. I mean, they were the ones that's look at, like, that. What was it, the episode that Mulder, I can't pronounce it. It's a French word. Jésus wet or whatever it is, the one with the genie.
Night Shift.
And the scene is he, you know, wishes for world peace, and he goes outside, and everybody's gone. And he's in the middle of downtown L.A. That's downtown L.A., which literally never doesn't have a car on it.
They must have had some really good security.
Empty. Oh, they well, apparently the story that goes, and I think we asked this to one of the location managers, Lauren, you might remember. There is a story that in the middle of one of the shots, there was a homeless person who starts walking in the background, and the PAs didn't catch the person, and it ruined the shot as one of the homeless people, like, walks a cart in the background. And they're, like, the only soul that, like, ends up in the shot. I think I read that in, like, LAX Confidential, and I think we asked one of the location guys about that. Like, it's just...
What happened? Yeah.
I think they ended up having to digitally touch the person out. But they had, like, they were saying they shot it at, like, 6 o'clock on a Sunday morning, which in it itself is, like, a horrible thought to
film
that early on a Sunday morning. But
I remember that for 28 days later, they did that in London, and they shot it at, like, 4:30 in the morning when it was, like, empty. I'm like, how?
But we used to do. I mean, we'd shoot overnight and in the middle of the desert. It was a lot more rare for the show I worked for, but like for the X-Files, that was a thing. That was all the time.
Totally.
I mean, they used to do it in Vancouver. They did it in Vancouver, like in the
middle. Yeah, they came here to Dallas a few times, especially for the movie's iconic, you know, bomb segment.
You had to.
So whenever I toured the Los Colinas studio, they had so many props. There was a great thing if you go to the Dallas House of Wax Museum, where they have these wonderful wax figures of Scully Mulder, as well as then they're looking at a toilet with a floating hand rotating. And so it's great. And
I don't
kudos to whoever that. Gave the great detail to both the leads' hairs.
Incredible.
Yeah.
The attention to detail, I think, is something that really also made the show stand out, especially as the show went on.
Phenomenal stuff.
The attention to detail and phenomenal. I'd like to shout out a group of people that people don't know who they are, and that's the script supervisors.
Yes.
They're the people that are in charge of continuity on a show, and the reason
sure
why
the reasons make sense.
Scene to scene, things match. I mean, every department is responsible for their individual.
It's an underrated job.
The script supervisor oversees it all, and that is a job that nobody knows exists, and it is the most important job, I think, on a show. Yes. And the X-Files, I always like to look for things on shows, like where things are screwed up, where marks are on the floor, where there's... But, And
where the stunt double stands out.
Where there's, and I mean, there's a few on the X-Files, but nothing. I mean, they were phenomenal in what they did. And I somebody had mentioned, we didn't get to interview any of the supervisors, but people did mention them. And they're just phenomenal. The show was just front to back. I mean, it was just done like a feature every week.
Absolute dynamite.
The show Bible for the show must have been huge.
I can't even imagine. I cannot even imagine. We've seen paperwork.
Yeah.
Because there's a Bible for every episode, and the Bibles for every episode are, you know,
300.
At least. I mean, I have a Bible from one of the episodes of ER, and that alone was like this. And you know,
so-and-so gets a heart attack, so-and-so reveals something personal, and then we got to have five key, you know, shocking
moments. It's insane. Yeah. I can't imagine what the dailies and because everything changes, but there's a color for every change. Mm-hmm. They would go through the rainbow multiple times.
The palette.
Oh, wow.
Script changes and oh my god, one liner is a daily schedule of it's called it's basically a shoot schedule broken down, but it's not in order. It's in shoot order, not in episode order. So when a one-liner is released before an episode, and then every time there's a change made, a new color is released. Well, the X-Files would have, I think there's 8 colors, and they would go through it 3 or 4 times in an episode.
Damn.
That doesn't exist. Usually it's 2 or 3 times that it's changed for a typical show within an episode. They were nonstop. They were, because the scripts were changing, and
yeah.
You know, there would be 10-15 script changes, color changes to the scripts. It was just
the actors ever comment on how they dealt with that?
Do you remember them? No, they kind of just rolled with the punches, right? I mean, that's a couple of people mentioned that there were times where they'd be receiving changes on set.
Right, but based on what we've been told, there were changes on set and filming.
The comedy schedule was hectic, I'm sure. Yeah,
exactly. Filming in the rain, filming in the ice, and things like that. But everyone was just so happy to be there. And the thing we keep hearing time and time again, as cliche as it sounds, is that it really was like a family, and everyone wanted to do their best because, and I pulled this quote from one of our interviews, they were surrounded by geniuses. And that's so nice. Like, who speaks like that about their coworkers, about the cast and crew? So everyone just brought their A game, and no one really complained. Not that they've shared with us, you know. Yeah. So it was really nice, because it would have been really would have been a short list of people we had interviewed if like the first dozen or so were like, "This is terrible. It was the worst time of my life. I don't want to tell you anything." We'd be like, "You know what? This was a terrible idea. We're not doing this project." So you know, the fact that we've interviewed close to 100 cast and crew, and everyone has had such positive and warm things to say about the cast and the crew and how everyone brought their best to the set every day is really inspiring to hear. And it's really nice to hear as a fan.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Because you just hate it when you hear memories and everything, and you got to take it with a grain of salt. It's like, yeah, no one knew everything what they were doing at first, but they got to it, you know, and I'm glad that it's avoided most clickbait sites, you know.
Right.
So-and-so hated you. No, bullshit. Not a thing.
A hard job, man. It's a hard job. Production.
Oh, yeah. I've done some extra work and stand-in stuff. And,
you know, like, the hours are long. It's grueling. Everybody has to be on all the time. And nobody complained. I've seen so many people from other shows, whether it's cast, crew, product, like even friends of mine who have gone on to work on other shows, who complain incessantly.
It's grateful.
Hard. So like, you know, you might like who you work with, but you know, maybe it's not organized production wise and things drag and people complain, and that's like the one
producers
thing
hired too many stuff. Guest directors who take their time, and that's not happening again. Yeah.
I've been there. You know,
sucks,
or
right?
The actors, you know, I won't say the name of the show, but there was a show that we worked very closely near, and the actors.
It was Barney. I knew it.
What's that?
It was Barney. Knew it.
Yes, it was Barney. Yes, Barney was the one.
He didn't know his lines, that damn in the suit. Anyway.
Man, he couldn't keep that purple hat on long enough, man.
Prima donna. Yeah. Kids didn't know how to sing. Damn it. Anyway.
He and his co-star, what was the other one's name? Like they you know, prima donnas, and they would sit in the trailers and fight to see who was gonna not come out first. And
Legion on the phone.
Your production day would be like 24 hours. You don't.
Yeah. Let's not do this, guys. Let's not be Hulk Hogan. It's
only on for, 2 years? I mean, come on.
Yeah.
It is amazing how they'll do it. And it's just like, what? Do you want a pay raise? What's going on here?
It's very cool to hear about ensemble casts. You don't often hear about ensemble production teams.
True.
Yeah. And I think it's a sorely missing thing, in all honesty, because it just seems like everyone is, again, just wants to give just one or two people a bunch of credit, and you're like, no, it's group effort. There's so many people who can keep this running. I want to talk to all the makeup guys, the stunt coordinator, the transportation guy, even the editor.
They're the ones that make it happen. I mean, mm-hmm. down to the production assistants. I mean,
yes,
every person.
Great
has
PAs,
a role.
And there's so many PAs I would encounter, and it's like, Jesus, this uncle of
it's
yours
a hard got
you. It is, but I knew one who was, he'd be funny 1 minute and then cynical the next, and I was like, I would be grateful, dude. I mean, even if you don't like the show that you're even working on, you know, what's ends up in the can, just, you know, your like step cousin got you this gig, it's take it, you know.
It had free food.
Everything
you
was
were taken
paid for
care
the year.
Of. I had free swag all the time. I was happy. I only made like 12 cents an hour, but you know, it was
damn.
I didn't make a lot. I really didn't make a lot, but
yeah,
I mean,
it's hard, and you got to have an understanding family. I would have plenty of people who wanted to text me, and I was like, no, stop getting mad that I'm not answering your phone, because it kind of can't happen in my 24 hours, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what it was. It was like, not, I mean, we were working 80 hour weeks, and it was a hard job. And X-Files was working a lot more than that.
Yep.
We had a light production schedule. They were always, and they literally were starting at like 3 or 4 a.m. on a Monday morning and not wrapping till like 5, 6, 7 in the morning on a Saturday. And that's insane.
That sounds like Saturday Night Live scheduling.
Pretty much. I think even worse. I mean, because they were literally circling the schedule with their
too many personas. Yeah,
they had three crews. They had crews going all the time, and they had two an A crew, a B crew, and then an insert crew, which was literally just like if you saw a hand, or
yeah, for the
that was a crew in itself.
Yeah,
that was all a separate crew. That was not often David or Jillian's hand or whatever.
Really, we got to find that hand. We got to interview that hand.
Right. The Addams Family.
So now I'm curious, with all that, you know, all those teams going all the time to shoot, you know, different locations almost for every episode, which helped make it feel like mini movies, and coming on budget, was this how much was the studio behind it? Were they like, let's keep throwing money at it? Were they like,
that's
is
a really good question, and that's something Chris talked about. You know, in the early seasons it took a little pushing. But once it hit its footing, the studio was very much behind it. But awesome. That being said, Harry Bring, who was the unit production manager for the Los Angeles unit, is the one who kept it on budget. And he would sometimes need to push the gamut a little bit, but they were not coming in $5 million over budget. They were coming in on budget every single time. And the studio... You know, Chris said the studio was very supportive of them, and you know, he would, if something was needed, he was able to get it.
That's good. As opposed to
that's a rarity. He didn't have to often push back, except for like Home, which was a problem when it went to network air. But that's a whole other thing. That didn't have to do with budget. That had to do with
the censors want to change everything last minute, and it's not happening.
Yeah, but you know, again, I can't stress enough that being on budget for any show is a rarity. Being on budget for a show that's shooting three units at all times is probably along the lines of like miracle level, because these shows are expensive to make, and X-Files was no cheap date. It was a lot of effects. The special effects makeup alone, like Lauren was saying, like the Alec Gillis stuff. And now he was in the he dealt with the movie, which was that's a whole different beast.
Lots to take in.
I'd love to see the Bible for that fucking thing.
I can't imagine.
That's very nice.
Structure 1013 has that. That budget was a lot. I mean, that was like a $50 million budget, I think, something, or $60 million budget. That was something different. But you look at like you were mentioning the submarine. They built that thing on a soundstage.
Yeah.
And kept it on budget, made a functioning submarine that went up and down.
Had to show an exterior, yeah. Stock footage on that one. Nope.
That's cool as hell.
Surreal. I mean, the studios, whatever. I will also preface Fox was a little bit different than other studios.
Yeah, wanted to find something that was kind of atypical TV.
Fox was still in its infancy, and it's still post Married with Children, post Simpsons.
New York Undercover and Living Color.
But it was a little bit more flexible in what it was doing because it was the controversial network.
Right.
Yep.
Whereas Warner Brothers, or working with like NBC and CBS, Viacom, those kind of things, they had a little bit more of a stranglehold on budget. Right. Fox was a little bit more loose at the time, and I'm trying to think who was the president at the time. I'm blanking on it, but
yeah,
they kind of let them get away with a little bit more because they were still trying to find their footing in the early 90s.
Right, the minute it stops being edgy is when we cancel the show.
Exactly. And it kind of allowed them to open the door for other stuff.
Totally.
So, before the Hulus, the Netflix, the Paramount Pluses of the world emerged.
Crazy.
Before all the insanity.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a Jacked Up.